This is a download from Forced Migration Online. To find out more, please go to www.forcedmigration.org.
Seminar in our seminar series on statelessness and forced migration. The seminar series is organized together with the Oxford Diaspora Forum, and today is our pleasure to have here Jarroj Kelesh from London Metropolitan University. Dr. Kelesh has been doing work on the Kurdish diasporas for many years and has been engaged with a number of projects. And also his PhD research is on the issue he's going to discuss today. I had the pleasure to work on two research projects with him on irregular migrant children and young people in the UK. So I really appreciate his work as a field worker and as a researcher.
Thank you very much.
The title for today's talk is The Reinvention of Kurdishness Through the Transnational Kurdish Media.
Thank you very much for your kind words, and also thank you very much for invitation. Okay. As Nando mentioned, the title of my presentation today is The Reinvention of the Kurdishness Through the Transnational Media. My research explored the complex linkages between Turkish and Kurdish transnational media and migrant communities. It seeks to understand how migrants make sense of media representation of the ethno-national conflict between the Turkish state and Kurdistan Worker Party, and how they position themselves in relation to the media text. The wider research explores how the media impact differently on Turkish and Kurdish migrants' view and ethnic identities in three European countries, in Sweden, Germany, and UK, basically in Berlin, Stockholm, and London. It's based on 74 in-depth interviews and 6 focus groups with Turkish and Kurdish migrants of diverse age, gender, political affiliation, occupation, length of migration, and drawing upon the concept of imagined community and also banal nationalism in the context of transnationalism. However, as you can see here, today this paper will focus mainly on the linkages between the nationalism, media, and Kurdish migrants, and the role of the transnational media, Kurdish transnational media, in articulating and mobilizing different political and identity positions for Kurdish migrants in Berlin, Stockholm, and London. First, I will give a brief as I use visual materials for this research and some news and some photographs from the Turkish and Kurdish newspapers too. Okay, I would like to first give a brief talk briefly about the origin of the Kurdish problem or Turkey's Kurdish problem. And later on I will talk about the Kurdish media and Kurdish diaspora, and then finally I will present my research funding. Okay, the Kurds predominantly live in the Middle East in the area called Kurdistan. There isn't such a country, but there is in the mind of millions of people that are such a country. And this is constructed, and Kurdistan, which comprises part of Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Iraq. This is the, I would like to show a short map here. As you can see, this is the map from McDowell, where exactly Kurdish population or where areas are populated by the Kurdish people in Middle East. Okay. the division of Kurdistan had first take place between the Ottoman Empire and Persian Empire following the Battle of Chaldiran in 1514. At the end of the 19th century, when the nationalist idea reached the border regions of Ottoman Empire, the Kurdish national movement organized revolts, and as a part of this movement, the first Kurdish language newspaper called Kurdistan was published in exile. Many Kurdish newspapers have been published in exile, in diaspora, also television. There is some parallelity between Kurdish refugees and Kurdish media. And mainly Kurdish media are constructed or produced by refugees, by diaspora communities in Europe, but in Middle East. Okay, after the First World War, the defeated Ottoman Empire signed the Treaty of Sèvres, which envisaged interim autonomy of the predominantly Kurdish area of Ottoman Empire with a view to full independence if the inhabitants of this area want this. This treaty was replaced by the Lausanne Treaty, which recognized a new state, the Turkish Republic, and the Kurdistan was divided following the British Empire and French colonial forces remapping of Middle East. And the Lausanne Treaty left Kurds without any statutory protection, and Kurds became the largest stateless nation in the world. Since 1923, the motto of the Turkish state has been one language, one nation, one flag. However, the construction of the Turkish nationhood in Anatolia was a difficult process due to the multi-ethnic and multi-faith composition of the region, and as a consequence of policies of denial, a bitter struggle between dominant Turkish ethnic Turks and between Kurds took place since 1924. As you can see, this is from Izadi. He stated that Kurdistan was occupied about 43% by Turkish state and 31 by Iran and 18 by Iraq and 6% by Syria. There are a lot of debates about the number of Kurds, about the actual Kurdistan, but this is not at the moment my topics today, and therefore I'm not going to talk long about the Kurdish issues. Okay. Since the foundation of the Turkish Republic, the Kurds have been denounced as a state enemy. The Prime Minister İnönü explained the direction of the newly established Turkish Republic in 1924. He said, "We are frankly nationalist, and nationalism is our only factor of cohesion. In the face of the Turkish majority, other elements have no kind of influence. We must Turkify the inhabitants of our land at any price." Kurds were displaced from where they live and moved to other regions of Turkey. Kurdish names and names of the cities were replaced by Turkish one, and the Kurdish language was banned in publicly in order which Benedict Anderson said, creating a unified communication or unified sense of place to disseminate the nationalism. To create country with speaking with one language, thinking in the same way and sharing the same sentiment. And it's all discussed there are a lot of documents. All this discussion has been taken in Turkish parliament at the beginning of the Republic. At ethnic groups other than Turks were excluded and marginalized by coercion and consent, subjecting them to the dominant ethnocentric nationalism. This policy was crucial to create a Turkish imagined political community and to create a unified field of exchange and communication of Turkishness and to extend moral and intellectual dominance over potential revival of the Kurdish nationalism. However, denial of the Kurdish existence have caused a hegemonic struggle between the Turkish state and second largest ethnic group, the Kurds, in Turkey, and led a series of struggles which caused a permanent crisis in Turkey. And still, Turkey is not a democratic state and still have problems with its Kurdish minorities. And still recently, many human activists, professors, and publishers have been arrested by the new government, which promised to bring to solve the Kurdish problem and to democratize the country. But it seems, I read yesterday the newspaper, it seems Mr. Erdogan is keen to arrest and many people, and this is the domination now between the Kurds and the Erdogan, and the Erdogan Islamic Party. They dominate Turkey at the moment, and now they would like have a hegemonic domination over Kurdish area too. Okay, the permanent crisis led to enactment of the anti-democratic state of emergency law until 2000. Yet the sub-suppressed Kurdishness has been reconstructed in Turkish prisons, in diaspora, and in mountains. Today, many Kurdish politicians and activists who were arrested and tortured as a consequence of the military regime in 60s, 70s, and 80s are the main protagonists of the Kurdish national movement in Turkey and as well as in Europe, where some of them are active in the production of the media. One of them, Yashar Kaya, I would like to show shortly his newspaper, new internet-based newspaper. I hope it will work. And another should be. Okay, this is the Yasar Kaya. He was arrested in the 60s with about 49 Kurdish intellectuals. And later on, he was also the owner of the Kurdish newspaper, which has been bombed in 1994. And as you can see, this old website, also, people who are really arrested have been for a long time imprisoned. For example, one of them, Ismail Besikci, the Turkish sociologist, he spent about 25 years in prison due to writing on the Kurdish issues. And another person is this Recep Marashli, and he spent also about 15 years in prison in Diyarbakir, one of the terrible and described by the UN one of the horrible prisons. And he is now in exile in Germany, and this website also belongs to him. As you can see, many of the Kurdish writers, most of them, for example, Ibrahim Güçlü, he used to live in Sweden in diaspora for a long time, and he was also imprisoned for a long time in Turkey. And as you can see, this is the people who were arrested and tortured, and later on they created the Kurdishness. The Kurdish nationalism began with these people, with these intellectuals, later on reached to population. Back to my PowerPoint. Okay, that's after long struggle. I mean, there is some debate in Turkey, as I mentioned. First time in 1991, the government they to the pressure of the European Union, they decided to give, to open the way for the Kurdish language that people can pray, can publish newspapers. And in 2002, Erdogan said, okay, we can broadcast in Kurdish too. And 2009, there is a TV called TRT Shesh in Kurdish for 24 hours. But this TRT also used mainly to promote the Kurdishness in Kurdish language. Okay, now I'm moving to Kurdish media in Turkey. Many scholars focus on the linkages between nationalism, nation state, and media, and they state that the nation, that the communication technologies are central to the constructing, forming, sustaining of the national identity, shared experience, collective identity, a sense of belonging to the particularity, to a particular ethnicity. However, the Kurdish media was not able until the 90s to construct a Kurdish identity, because Kurdish media was banned in Turkey. And in 90s, Kurdish newspaper have been begun to publish. The name of the Kurdish newspaper has had a symbolic name, meaning. They brought to the mind in the Kurdish people the Yeni Ülke, new country, which signify Kurdistan. This newspaper published in Istanbul, or the name Özgür Ülke, free country, Azadiye Velat, freedom of country, challenged the idea of the Turkey as a unified, homogeneous nation. It promotes the Kurdish nationalist project of an independent and free Kurdistan, Kurdistana Azadi. Even the names of the magazines and newspaper constitute a challenge to a unified Turkish nation and divided into two, Turkish state and new country. As Anderson pointed, Benedict Anderson pointed, that pointed out, newspaper and radio are consumed in private, yet each reader is well aware that is the ritual of simultaneously shared by millions of others, and the full of readers to whom they were connected through the print media formed an embryo of the nationally imagined community. Benedict Anderson said that the nation created through the media, because people, for example, in Manchester and in Kent, people will never meet as a member of the nation. And they can meet through the newspaper. They can share, because they can share experiences only through the media. And they accept that they are a member of a nation. And therefore, I use this Anderson's module to understand the transnational Kurdish media. This newspaper introduced new concept to the terms like Kurdish National War of Independence, the Kurdish freedom struggles, Kurdish revolt, Kurdish uprising, people of Kurdish descent, mentioned of the PKK, the ceasefire, the call of peace, the Kurdish flag, the Kurdish parliament in exile, the war, crimes against humanity, South Kurdistan, Kurdish leader, Kurdish generals, etc., etc. And this is all of them are, these all terms are just a position to the Turkish state or Turkish ideology. As you can see, this is one newspaper published in Istanbul in 1996, and they were not allowed to publish many articles. Why? What they did, they just put the title of the news, and the rest is censored. I mean, there's a published pages, you couldn't read anything, just the title, yes? And this is the way they try to struggle with Turkish government, in particular Chile, the government of Chile. Many Kurdish newspapers were attacked through the judicial system and the armed forces. The correspondent and distributors of these newspapers were arrested. Between 1990 and 1995, 26 correspondents and distributors were killed by the state forces in Turkey. 1994, Turkish General and Prime Minister Tansu Çiller openly declared that the separatist media should be silenced. 2 weeks later, the pro-Kurdish Özgür Ülke headquarters and other two offices were bombed. All the Kurdish newspapers in Turkey were subjected to heavy fines, forcing them to close and re-establish themselves under new names, distributing the disrupting of the distribution and criminalizing readers. I mean, I was at that time in Istanbul. It was impossible to read really newspaper. I was several times, police stopped me several times, and I had to go to police central and say why I have to read this newspaper. And at that time I was a student, and was really, if we bought this newspaper, we had to quickly put in our bag, and it was impossible to read this newspaper in public. Okay. With the exception of Kurdistan-Iraq, since 1991, the status of Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria have banned and suppressed Kurdish language and publication in Kurdish. This status kept a monopoly on radio and television broadcasting over Kurdish-populated regions. There were some radios from different countries, including Armenia, Egypt, Baghdad, which lasted a decade and disappeared because of them were operated certain external power and ideologies to control Kurdish nationalism. Iran had some radios, and Armenian radio was in Kurdish, and also US, they established in the 40s one Kurdish radio to make propaganda against communism. The radio was in Kurdish. With the broadcasting of Met TV from London in 1995 and its successor Media TV, Roj TV, as well as many other transnational Kurdish TV stations from Iraqi Kurdistan, the states occupying Kurdistan have lost their monopoly control of broadcasting over Kurdistan as well as over Kurds. The transnational Kurdish satellite television broadcasting from Europe and from Kurdistan region and Iraq can be received through satellite dishes around the world. So Kurdish satellite TVs have connected the stateless Kurds across different geographical spaces and started to construct and form a deterritorialized imaginary Kurdish political community. This development has been described, as you can see, described by Bert. This is really interesting quotations. He said the Kurds remain in fractured people on many levels, torn between countries, regions, political parties, tribes, families, dialects, outlook, the old and the new. Yet, modern technology coupled with oppression has changed everything. Through satellite communication and internet, the Kurds have their own television show, radio broadcast, publication, and websites, all of which are theoretically available on every Kurds anywhere in any in the world. About Kurdish newspapers in Europe, there's still two newspapers in Europe, but the first Kurdish dailies were Özgür Gündem and Özgür Ülke, produced in Turkey and distributed with a European edition in Europe. But when the Özgür Ülke newspaper offices were in Istanbul were bombed in 1994, the newspaper began publishing in German. The same newspaper they published in German. And mainly published by Kurdish diaspora in Germany. Germany is the center of the Kurdish printing media. The reason is about 1 million Kurdish migrants living in Germany. And there is also some new newspapers, for example, Rudal. It's only in Kurdish and in Sorani, in two Kurdish dialects. And to satellite televisions. With the broadcasting in 1994 of Met TV from London and Brussels, the Kurds transcended the international borders, which since 1918 has divided the land in which Kurds live. the Kichanas, a lot of the curves for the first time in their history to establish a powerful mode of communication amongst themselves and undermine the state's centered geographical order that has reduced them to the status of helpless minorities. Met TV, Media TV, Roche TV, and other new Kurdish TV channels have created juxtaposition to the Turkish nationalist discourse by broadcasting in Kurdish, providing news from a Kurdish perspective and discussions far removed from the Turkish coercive power in diaspora about self-determinism, Kurdish culture, language, the construction of the Kurdish identity, history, and language. MET TV, there is this, in particular MET TV, created a language that there isn't, unfortunately, a standard that Kurdish language. There are four different dialects. And the Kurmanji is mostly used in Turkish Kurdistan, and Sorani is used in Iraqi Kurdistan, and in Syria also people speak they speak Kurmanji, and in Iran also Sorani, Havrani, different dialects. Also within Turkey, there's two different dialects, and one's Kurmanji and one's Azaki. And but MET TV, firstly, they standardized a language, Kurmanji, mainly, and many people therefore, if you speak High Kurdish, they say, "Ah, you are speaking MET TV Kurmanji. That is, you are speaking something, some language which is used in television, not in everyday life." Okay, this is Hassan Puhu research on really good. He done really good research on MET TV. He stated it is clear that every second of MET TV's broadcasting seriously undermines Turkish sovereign rule. The logo MET TV, which is always present in the upper left corner of the screen, is an assertion of the Kurdishness. The Kurds are matters, not Turks. Because the ideology of the Turkey, the nationalist idea of the Turk, was saying all the people are in Turkey, they are Turkish. There isn't any Kurdish element. This policy has been continued until the 80s. The logo's colors of red, yellow, and green are the colors of the Kurdish flag. Moreover, the flag itself appears frequently in the programming, ranging from news and information to entertainment and culture. The daily menu begins with a grand orchestra performing the Kurdish national anthem. The ever presence of the Kurdish national flag and atoms means that MET TV has the power to treat the Kurds not as audience but as citizen of Kurdish state. However, Ankara unleashed its coercive forces to prevent the reception of the airwaves within Turkey, whereas in Europe it used political power, its espionage, jamming, and various forms of intimidation to stop the emission of television signals. Turkey uses its coercive forces to prevent the reception of the airwaves within Turkey, including destroying or banning satellite dishes, arresting and jailing audience for watching MET TV, banning people from giving interview to the MET TV. MET TV's license was revoked by Tony Blair's government in 1990 on the ground that it was not in public interest to have any broadcaster used the UK as platform for broadcasts which incite people to violence and were unlikely to encourage and incite crime or to lead disorder. Basically, there was a huge discussion between British government and Turkish government, and at the end of the day, Tony Blair decided to close Met TV. And of course, the Kurds established another TV called Media TV and started to transmit via satellite from France from 1990 to 2004. The French authorities took away Media TV license in 2004 because of its links with the PKK, Kurdistan Workers Party. But this time, the TV moved from Denmark under the new name of Roj TV and began transmitting from there in 2004. Turkish effort to close down the Turkish Kurdish TV station have made the Kurdish broadcasting situation more public. Media TV, Roj TV face resistance not only from the various status threat in Kurdistan, but also from anti-terror police forces in the UK, Belgium, and Germany. And the Kurds blamed the Belgian government for accepting the Turkish order to close down their studio. Now, Roj TV is faced with another court case in Denmark. According to Wikileaks published US documents, Turkish authorities objected to Anderson Fogh Rasmussen, the former Prime Minister of Denmark, to be head of the NATO. And it apparently, according to this document, he promised the Turkey to close down Roj TV in Denmark. And now they took legal actions against Roj TV to close down. Okay, I think it's enough about Kurdish media. And I have about 30 minutes. I'm moving direct to Kurdish migration to Europe. Any study of the Kurdish communities of Europe needs to be understood in a transnational diasporic context, where the political background to Kurdish refugee status are central to who they are, how they live their lives in Europe. From the 1950s onwards, refugees, asylum seekers from the disputed territory of Kurdistan have been arriving in Europe. Since the late 80s, as a result of the war between Kurdistan Worker Party and Turkish state, Saddam Hussein's use of the gas weapon against the Kurds in Halabja and other areas, the Gulf War in 1991, the Islamic Republic Iran's attacks to the Kurdish minorities or political movement, many people, they try to find safe place in Europe or in other areas. For example, there are about 200,000 Kurds living in Lebanon as a refugee. I mean, there isn't any documents about them. Recently, the Lebanese government asked them to leave country. About 8,000 people have to leave country in. They got letters. They have to leave the country. Yes. Okay. Yes, according to I'm not going to all details about Kurdish diaspora, and I'm talking here only about UK, Germany, and Sweden. And Bozarsan estimate that the number of the Kurds in Sweden are around 50 or 60, including all the Kurds from different parts of Kurdistan. Sweden is very important for the Kurdish diaspora because the Kurdish language is, the modern Kurdish language is not developed in Kurdistan, developed in Sweden. And the reason for this, the Olof Palme supported the Kurds and he funded a lot of projects. And even today, at schools, many Kurdish children they can learn Kurdish language in Sweden. Therefore, Sweden is also very important in media production, in transnational media production. Okay. And in Germany, there are about, I have no really exact numbers of the Kurds, very conflicted. I avoid to give some numbers, but there are some references in different books, different recently I read one German Bundestag papers. They estimated about 801 million Kurds in Germany. And the reason that we haven't any data about Kurds are registered in the UK, in Germany, in Sweden as Turks or Iranian or Iraqi or Syrian. And this makes difficult to many Kurdish people to get service in country. I mean, I went to hospital and asked the data about Kurds. And they told me, we don't have any data about Kurds. And I asked, are you assuming that the Kurdish people are really healthy, they don't come to hospital or not? And they say, I'm sorry, but they are Turks. We don't have any documents because people are registered according to their nationals, but not ethnic affiliations. But recently they started one huge campaign regarding the census 2011. And the Kurdish communities, they call the Kurdish the Kurds to register their ethnic identity, language, and the origin of the country. And in the UK, the estimated number of the Kurds about 150,000 and 200,000, according to BBC's recent research. Okay, in the 80s, the Kurdish national movement discovered the power of the diaspora, which is distant from the direct experience of coercion by the dominant group in Turkey. In diaspora, Kurdish nationalists can more freely disseminate their messages, symbols, language through different agencies, including transnational media. Therefore, they started to publish newspaper, establish a transnational television station in Europe, which created an interconnected popular Kurdish imagine within Turkey, but also in diaspora. Feeling of identity, displacement, exile, and belonging create what Wahlberg has described as a strong sense of identity and feeling of displacement, exile, belonging amongst Kurds, which he refers to as diasporic consciousness, by which he means that their status and background are central to who they are and how they behave in diaspora. Political refugees, for example, differ from other migrants in that they retain a strong political orientation towards their homeland, with the hope maybe they will go, maybe not. But this, you know, we are talking in the sociology, the myth of return. Many diaspora communities are talking about this myth, that they would like turn to their homeland. This is failed, of course. Many diaspora communities, they tried to, but they couldn't manage to stay in their homeland, except in some groups in ex-Yugoslavian. In this sense, the reinforcement of identity, culture, community, political organization from the homeland became central to the way life is lived in diaspora. Others have described how ethnic entrepreneurs use the notion of the politicized ethnicity to call Kurdish identity around the community center to build and reaffirm solidarity for struggle in Kurdistan. However, I'm not suggesting that community is homogeneous. It has, like any other community, subgroups, divisions based on class, position, genders, multitude of political groups who are central to organizing the community. I find that many Kurds in three countries, both first and second generation, have a strong affiliation to Kurdish identity. I will come later on why exactly. In 1995, the Kurdistan Worker Party has operated across the border of multiple nation states, mobilizing Kurdish diaspora and second generation young people for the homeland politics. The war between the Turkish state and Kurdish national movement was no longer confined within the territory of Turkey, but it became deterritorialized, it became internationalized. Scholars have highlighted that intrastate violence conflicts are no longer fought solely in the actual war territories. Increasingly, conflict seems to become dispersed and delocalized. Therefore, the relationship between identity groups and nation state is no longer confined within as an established imagined nation, but it is this deterritorialized. People can live in different spaces, but they can have feeling of being Kurdish or being Turkish. And the media help them to keep their connection with the homeland. Okay, I'm finally coming to the Kurdish migrants' media consumption. Before the transnational media became widely available, migrant participation in homeland politics was limited. I mean, think about in 60s, 70s, and many people, I met in Sweden and in Germany, Turkish and Kurdish migrants, they told me they couldn't talk to their relatives, even if they came from the rural areas. They couldn't have telephone even. They had to send them a letter, or if they went to their country, they could see their relatives. But today, recently, I did one research, and I talked to one person, and in the same time, the person was on internet and was Skype open, and he talked with somebody, and I asked some question to him, and he asked also the person who was on Skype, and later on I understand the lady was in Diyarbakir in a Kurdish city, and the man sitting in London, and I asked whether he's doing every day this. He told me it is 24 hours is open my Skype, and I'm talking with my relatives. You can see how the time compressed, and there is the some people say end of the geography. The sense of geography is not anymore there. People are connected through the media. Okay. Numerous studies have been conducted on the transnational media consumption of Turkish audience in Germany, including the Centrum für Türkei Studies Research, Weiss and Trebs and Schulthal, but also in Sweden and in the UK. This research on Turkish migrants provides rich empirical materials on Turkish on Turkish transnational audience. However, these studies encompassed Kurds in terms of Turkish migrant in Germany, in the UK. I mean, if you look at Robbins or Aksoy research, also if you look at the Centrum for Türkei Study in Germany, they are talking. They are researching on people from Turkey, but they are not mentioning any words about Kurds. They're just saying Turkish migrant. Indeed, there is, in particular, the research in the UK, the majority of people from Turkey are Kurdish. There is not a lot of Turks, most of them Kurdish. And then, of course, we have also Turkish Cypriot communities, totally different, yes? But all these researchers, they are imposing some ideological frameworks and ignoring the differences. These approaches ignore the ethnic and cultural differences and diverse media consumption habits between Turkish and Kurdish audience. Therefore, it is impossible to understand how both conflicted migrants groups create meaning of their ethnic identities, imagined homeland, and ongoing ethno-national conflict through the consuming Turkish-Kurdish media. Okay. Okay, it is complicated to explore the media consumption habits of Kurdish transnational audience because of the diversity of the identity, profiles, lengths of residency, age, gender, education, and psychology, and the diversity of the socio-political spaces in which the media are consumed in an age of globalization. Their media consumption is not only limited to the particular media, and they follow a range of media which are not directly related to their ethnic identities. For example, Kurdish audience follow Kurdish media, but also Turkish media and the media of the country of settlement. A person affiliated to Kurdish transnational political movement follows the Kurdish, Turkish mainstream media, TVs, as well as following the media in settlement countries. However, their ethnic and political belief system play an important role in the consumption of print and transnational media. Although they follow different media in different language, some audience have a strong sense of belonging to Kurdishness due to the ethno-national conflict in the homeland. Benedict Anders with the creation of a standardized language through print media as a key element of the development of national consciousness. I mean, Benedict Anders say that if you have a common language, you can create a nation. If you don't have common language, you can't create a nation. But the Kurdish case is really opposite to this idea. Because Kurds have four different dialects, Sorani, Kurmanji, Zazaki, Gorani, and use different scripts, Latin, Cyrillic, and Arabic, and consume media in different languages, and live in different nation states, have developed a part. They have developed a unified national consciousness. I mean, I interviewed in the three different cities, and I find the same. They are talking about the same subject. They are using the same terms. For example, many people use the term Northern Kurdistan. It is used this in Kurdish media, referring to Turkish Kurdistan. But none of them say Turkish Kurdistan. All of them say Northern Kurdistan, except one. Okay. While I do not reject Anderson's concept that the media connected people from different geographical spaces through feeling part of a nation, however, I qualify this argument by suggesting theirs do not need to be taught in a single standardized print languages. Kurdish newspaper and satellite TV channels report similar news on the Kurdish, on the Kurds in different dialects. This shared news content created imagined shared experiences and awareness of the Kurdish, awareness of the Kurds in different parts of Kurdistan. I mean with this, that if there is a news, and they are, for example, if you go to Fırat news agencies, and you will find news in Turkish, in Kurdish, in Arabic, and also the other newspaper, for example, if you watch Roj TV, there are news in different languages, in Arabic, Turkish, and now they start in English. That is very multilingual media, but they are providing the same news, and people reading the same news, and they are sharing the same experiences. Yes, therefore, the Anderson's idea that we should have that should be a common language is not really related to today's world. In the light of the new scholarship on transnational, Anderson Booth. Okay, I'm moving from this. Another issue with Anderson. Anderson said that he used the term long distance nationalism, that people who live in different country, but they are doing politics, homeland politics. And he described these people as passive, unable to be integrated to the mainstream society where he lived. But it is also, if we look at the transnational communities, if we look at the lobby work of the Kurds, the demonstration of the Kurds, different across Europe, we can see they are not passive. They are active, they are a part of the process. They are not influencing the process, but they are a part of this.
Therefore, it is this, the term long-distance nationalism has also not relevant for the case, this case. Okay, the outcome of my research showed that the Kurdish audience in all different countries regularly watch Kurdish originated Roj TV and MMC. This is a music canal in the UK and in Germany. While many Swedish Kurds prefer Kurdi 1, MMC, and Roj TV, Kurdistan TV, and Zagros TV. These TVs, for example, Roj TV is mostly watched by Kurds from Turkey. But as you can see, Kurds in the UK and in Germany, they are watching similar, that they are watching only Roj TV, which is related to mostly to Turkish Kurdistan. But the Kurds in Sweden, they watch more news from Iraqi Kurdistan. This is a difference. You can see they turn their face mostly to the other part of Kurdistan too, while the Kurds in the UK and in Germany, they think only on the Turkish Kurdistan. This is the problem of the Kurds, I think. Still, for example, they couldn't create a cross-border movement, cross-border print media until today. And there are, of course, there are various problems, internal and external factors for this. Are you with me or yes? Certainly, this media consumption habit has created opportunities for Kurdish ethnic religious groups, those identity were denied by Turkish state. In particular, the Kurdish, Assyrian, Chaldanian, and Syrianic ethnic group, and those of Alevi belly. That is, I'm talking about Assyrian, Syriani, Chaldanian, and Syrianic. Mostly they live in Sweden. And they have had several televisions. Unfortunately, there isn't any research about this, if you're interested. As it's a very small minority group, they are living in Iraq and in Syria, in Turkey. But most of them, they escaped to Sweden. And there is a huge, really strong Assyrian or Chaldanic and diaspora in Sweden, only in Sweden. For example, many Turkish audience I interviewed, when I ask about Assyrian or Chaldanic, none of them know. They say, oh, we don't know about this. But the Kurds was a family because the Assyrian and Syrianic people, they are living mostly in Mardin, exactly in the Kurdish populated region. Okay, these TV stations gave voice to the different identities and perspectives of people, but also reconceptualized them in political, ideological, religious, and ethnic terms, and drove out communalities, despite the Turkish state having suppressed the identity, different identity, they have now found their voice through these satellite TV channels where they can communicate and discuss their identities. Many Kurds from different geopolitical spaces, from Kazakhstan, from Sweden, or from Iraq, from Iran, from Canada, they are calling and talking on one program, on Roj TV. That is the Roj TV is the one program at the medium, connected people from different places, and they are talking on the same program. This is a new conversation, which some people say new conversation between Steya and Muva, and which created a transnational or deterritorialized ethnic identities. They have seen first time their face, their tradition, language, political view, and ethnic identity on screen. A Kurdish Alevi stated in Berlin that she had not learned anything about Alevi identity in school in Turkey. So she watches Roj TV or Dem TV, Alevi TV. Alevi is a religious group in Turkey. regularly to learn about Alevism. Similarly, other Kurds stated that they see Kurdish Rose TV as our window to the world. The Kurdish media has also introduced different terms and terminologies into everyday life of Kurds. For example, while Kurdish Turkish state and media and many Turkish migrants see the ethno-national conflict between Turkish state and PKK as a problem of terror in east and southeast of Turkey, the Kurds see it as a legitimate resistance to the Turkish state oppression, occupation, and violation against Kurdish people. As you can see, this is the quotations he said, I'm not a sympathizer of the PKK, but in my view, the real terrorist is the Turkey, not the PKK. It is, this discourse has been used in many Kurdish media. Even the Turkish media report that 70,000 people have been killed in Kurdistan. They do not say Kurdistan. This is very interesting. That it definitely shows that he's following the Turkish media, but he reinterpreted, reworked, and then according to his ethnic affiliations. Okay, interview partner say Rojhan sees the PKK as a Kurdish armed opposition. This term has been used by the Turkish media and some Kurdish politicians, like the mayor of the Diyarbakir, Kurdish populated Diyarbakir, and also prominent Kurdish politician Leyla Zana. Moreover, Rojhan sees the PKK guerrillas as a freedom fighters and criticizes the German media for calling the PKK as a sub-Kurdish separatist. According to Rojhan, quotation, this is the language of Turkish media. The German media has translated it from Turkish media into German and they use it. And the Kurdish media also uses terms such as colonized Kurdistan, Kurdish armed opposition, guerrilla, the Kurdish leader of the leader of the Kurdish people, referring to the Öcalan, the PKK leader, Northern Kurdistan, referring to Kurdistan region in Turkey, South Kurdistan, referring region in Iraq, Kurdistan region in Iraq. The repeated use of these terms in media normalized and makes them taken for granted in everyday life in the separate communities. Billy Wood describe such a terms as a banal nationalism. Many scholars they pay attention on banal nationalism in different nation status, but there isn't any work about the banal nationalism in stateless nations media. It is a part of my PhD, but I'm not going to talk about banal nationalism in Kurdish media today. Okay, I just mentioned that is the Kurdish media uses the term such in terms. Okay. Mirza, a Kurdish participant who worked for a Swedish media company in Stockholm, uses the term Northern Kurdistan as it's used in the Kurdish media. For example, I am from Kurdistan. Okay, I'm asking him, but from which part of Kurdistan? Turkish Kurdistan? And then he replies, I do not like this term. Turkish Kurdistan. Kurdistan doesn't belong to Turkey. It's occupied by Turkey. You are using the term to legitimize the occupation. No, I am from Northern Kurdistan. It is clearly the term which really used in Kurdish community centers, but also in Kurdish media. And you can see how he described where he's from. The term Northern Kurdistan is used in Kurdish media and also in Kurdish community center, which operates as a virtual embassies of stateless Kurds. I call the Kurdish community centers as a virtual embassies of the stateless Kurds because they play an important role for the Kurds and providing service, but also creating solidarity, but also providing different cultural activities. Because Kurds have no any nation state, and many of them really they faced with different problems, even in the UK and Germany. I mean, being stateless person it is not pleasant, and you are every time you have to justify your position, and in particular if you're refugees, and you are not protected by even by the so-called European countries. And you are unprotected in different countries. And I met one person during my interview in Sweden. He changed in 1 year 4 countries. And because he noticed that he was involved in political movement. And his name was on the papers, was a member of the PKK, or not member, but sympathizer. And therefore his name was on the paper in Turkey, in France, in Germany, and in Netherlands. And he moved to Sweden to try to find protections, yes? I mean, it is not easy to live as a person stateless person. Okay, because we live in the world of nation status. I mean, everything is designed for the nation status. And culture, policies, and borders. Okay. However, the term Northern Kurdistan has also different meaning for Kurdish individuals depending on whether they engage in Kurdish political movement in diaspora. I ask carefully about Kurdistan and north of Kurdistan to test whether other Kurds have a similar understanding of the terms. Because, as I mentioned, many Kurds, they say they are from northern Kurdistan. And I try to test this. And as you can see, I ask him, are you from north of Kurdistan? He said, no, I am not from North Iraq. He understands North Kurdistan as a North Iraq. And I'm Kurdish from Turkey. I was born on the border, but later on, my family immigrated to Istanbul. What do you mean by born on the border? My family comes from Sivas. There was a conflict between our villages and Turkish villagers before September. He's talking about 70 September 1980. Our village is exactly on the border between the Turkish and Kurdish villages. It is very interesting. Even he's not influenced from the Kurdish media, but he's saying I was born on the border. Yes, well, it is more. You can see it is not only related to media, but also there is some socio-political issues in these quotations. 5 minutes. Okay, I'm almost finished. Okay, the Turkish media consumed amongst Kurds in Sweden is lower than the Kurds than that of the Kurds in Germany and in the UK. Some participants stated that they watch and read Turkish media only if there is some discussions of Kurdish issues. The Kurds in Germany and the UK follow the Turkish media daily in order to know what the Turkish fascist media deal with Kurdish issues. It's quite interesting that Koshnik, she did one research in 1995 and also Hafez in 2002. And in the same people used for the Turkish media, the Kurds used the term fascist media. This media was this term mainly used before the 80s.
before the military regime, many people used left movement used against the mainstream media. But it is, you can see, it is in diaspora, many people use the same terms. It could be some things is related that many people, they came in 80s and still with this mind and still using the same terms. And then the community also got the same terms, yes? Calling the Turkish media as a fascist media. Although they called Turkish media fascist, they still consume it, both for the news of the ongoing debate about the Kurds and also for entertainment, because the Kurdish media offers mostly political discussion and does not have any program for relaxing. This is very interesting. I mean, that's show that there's also people have some affiliation to their ethnic identities, but or they are not. They can choose different programs according to their needs, individual needs, not ethnic needs. Yeah. There is also many second generation. They are following the settlement countries' media, but again, the reason they are following the settlements media is because related to Kurdish somethings, related to Kurds. One person say, yes, there was on BBC World something about Kurds, therefore I watch it. Or two people in Germany mentioned the same, that they say, we're watching Arte. Arte is a French-German corporation, after teaching 4 hours, really, it's difficult to talk for me here. Okay. And they mentioned also saying, yes, we are watching Arte because there are programs on Kurds. It means they are looking through the media to find some program related to their ethnic identity in the settlement countries too. Okay, to the end. Creation of the mediated experience through the print, visual, and digital media amongst Kurdish migrants in settlement countries created a national consciousness, a belonging to Kurdishness, and sense of belonging. And there is strong connection, strong affiliation. In particular, the second generation, if I use the second generation, we are using the term in Germany, second generation means it is a person who were father and mother are migrants, but they were born in Germany, yes? Born and educated in Germany. Therefore, in Germany, people use the term second generation. And the second generation, many of them, they stated they have to do something. Because they are watching media and they see how the Turkish police treated the Kurdish people. And one person stated, we are here safe, we can do something for our people. And therefore, I try to be a part of lobbying or demonstration for my people. And this my people, the sense of peoplehood is coming from the media. Things about in 80s, Kurdish migrants, when they moved in 60s, 80s in Germany, there wasn't any sense of Kurdishness among first generation. The second generation who teach their parents to be Kurds. This is very interesting, really, because firstly, they notice that their parents speak different language, not Turkish. And secondly, the new arrival from Kurdistan, because in 80s, many of Kurds came to Germany when the Turkish government started to burn about 4,000 villages and estimated about 3 million people displaced. And some of them, they came to Germany and they meet the second generation and new arrival. They met and they created a new sense of Kurdishness. A politicized Kurdishness. I'm not going to details, I have not a lot of time, but I would like just really show you one quotations. Okay.
Yes, this is very interesting quotation. And he's second generation Kurds, and he's saying it is for him is the traditional identity, Kurdish identity is not important. For him is the politicized Kurdish identity important. And politicized Kurdish identity means for him that it's something related to transnational political Kurdish movement, and which dream from a Kurdistan, from a state called Kurdistan. Okay, I think that's, thank you very much. I hope it was okay.
If you've enjoyed this download, you might like to listen to other podcasts of Forced Migration Online. www.forcedmigration.org/podcasts